Good evening, and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Karen from North Carolina. Welcome, Karen.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
You know, that is so exciting to hear that voice that says, "You are unmuted."
It's like a practice thing, isn't it?
Oh, it's huge.
You are unmuted, and here is your life.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah. I'm so happy to be here.
Great. Great. I'm thrilled to be here, too. Tell me about Green Cove.
Oh, my goodness. There is so much. You know, I got your email and asking if I would join the program and talk about that, and I've been looking at that all day, and there's just so much to share. I mean, where do I begin? There's so many ways to look at it. I mean, I'm a practitioner of many years of going to retreats. It's a vacation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a vacation.
And then, from another point of view, it could be a very challenging opportunity for practice.
Uh-huh.
And it's really wonderful on both levels.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're saying everything all at once.
I had a great time.
Great. Yeah, to me what's valuable about being on retreat is being able to see all of it in the way that you describe, not simply just this perspective from this aspect of the personality and then the other side of the duality from the other aspect of the personality. And it sounds like you're really seeing all of that.
Yes, because, you know, my experience of the retreat and all that I'm asked to do and contribute, you know, I can be aware of what's going on or project that I'm aware of, you know, what's going on from many points of view. And actually from within my own self, those many points of view are going on all the time.
Yes. And on retreat, we have a chance to see that more clearly.
Yeah. And so, you know, in terms of this particular retreat, it's such a lovely place. It's like it is a camp. So we get to go and we get to be at a camp experience. There's rustic accommodations. There's that part. It's kind of like staying in the hermitage. At the monastery,
uh-huh.
You know?
Yes.
And then there's really good food and sangha. You know, I guess there's another part that I really enjoy about these retreats is the experience of sangha.
Uh-huh. Tell us more about that.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I live in a kind of a remote, isolated area. And, you know, I come to the monastery and I experience sangha and I have several sitting groups that I participate in, well, actually two here in Western North Carolina. And so to go on a retreat very close to home and 25 or so people show up and we get to practice together and have the community of the privileged environment. And that's something at this point in my practice that I really relax into.
Yes. So there's that privileged environment, sangha, you participate in two sitting groups, and here is a retreat close to home with 25 people, and I project a real sense of community and opportunity to deepen practice.
Yep.
And from what you said also, it sounds like it's a very beautiful location. I saw a picture on the web. I understand there's a lake and lots of hiking trails and
all of that. It's a very beautiful location. You know, and we show up, we have a little group in the morning. I mean, it was so special this time where we got to look at a projection exercise that what opens our heart. We got to do this all week long. and then we have, you know, group in the evening, and then we have working meditation twice a day. It's just such a wonderful practice opportunity.
Yes, it sounds like it. Tell us more about what you saw with the projection.
Well, okay, let me see what arises about that. So we were asked to so much of our practice exercises involve being with the senses and our in what we hear and see and taste and smell. So we were out in nature and we were asked to pick up an object and specific exercises with communicating with this object and and then there was that, and then we got to get another object and that as well, and so we got to just experience our, well, for me, I got to experience myself in a different way through the projection of
Aaron, you're cutting out a little bit there.
Am I cutting out?
A little bit.
How's
yep.
that?
That's better, yeah.
Okay.
So you said you could see yourself in a different way as a result of that projection exercise.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Great. Yeah, so you picked up an object, and sounds like you were asked to look at what you projected onto that object.
Well, we were asked to, like, you know, have conversations with the object. That was just part of our workshop experience in the morning. Yeah. To see what the object would want to communicate with us and what we'd want to communicate with that. And it was just a different way that I had never experienced before of, opening my heart to nature.
Yes, yes. And as you mentioned a minute ago, there was a lot of focus on the senses.
Yes.
In terms of what are you seeing, what are you hearing, and in nature, of course, all the smells and the feelings of what you're walking on.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for me that's always a very powerful experience when I check in with my senses because it immediately brings me to back here in the moment.
Yes. Yes. And for me, what was really especially valuable was the what I had never experienced before was that the surprise for me with this, you know, we do a lot of exercises with opening the heart, and I experienced a different, deeper place of that heart opening with this exercise. I don't know if I'm explaining that really well, but it just was something different. Really very moving for me.
Very moving for you. Yeah, I can get a sense. You said there are a lot of heart-opening exercises, and first thing I thought was, well, I could use a lot of that as well.
Yeah.
I think we all could use a lot of that.
Yeah.
That kind of that reminder of what's possible for us when we're not in the story.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, I mean, the whole being on retreat in such a lovely environment and privileged environment that we're in a safe place where we can relax into the moment.
Yes, yes, safe place. You can relax into the moment, and I know for me at least, having those kinds of experiences allows me to recall that experience when I'm not on retreat.
Exactly.
So I can take that with me.
Exactly. I mean, to me, that's the whole value. I mean, when I first went on retreat years and years and years ago, it seemed like such a challenge. And now it's like it's a way that it's a refuge. It's a refuge where I can go and practice being with my heart, being with myself, being with Sangha, being with Sherry and the monks, coming home and bringing that with me into daily life.
Yeah, it's a real gift.
Yeah.
Karen, thanks for spending time with us tonight.
You know, I am so honored that you called me. When I got the email, conditioning was just like scrambling to. Don't I have an appointment?
Don't I have to be somewhere?
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I'm honored. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
All right.
Good night.
Okay, good night.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. Nice to hear yours. I tell you, that was one of the drawbacks to be, I don't know. You know, at the time of the radio show, of course, we were in evening group all together, and, you know, the sun is going down, and there the dogwoods in blossom out across the lake, and so, you know, it's not like we were in some sort of hardship land, but we did miss getting to be with you folks on the radio, because we just simply couldn't get the technology to work, which is kind of funny when you stop and think that the technology we're talking about is a telephone. You know, it's, yeah, but anyway.
Yeah, when you're in Zambia, it makes more sense to me.
That's right. We're in the wrong time zone.
Right.
We don't have telephones, and it's the middle of the night. But we were in North Carolina. But as Karen said, it's a camp. So, you know, I don't know, maybe 8 months out of the year, something like that. There's just nothing there. There's nobody and nothing is going on. So they just, you know, unhook everything and close it down. And then we're the first people who come in for the season. So, and of course, you know, they don't need the phones. It was kind of a surprise to them that we would want, you know, that we would have that need. So they scrambled around and they did the best they could, but they just couldn't make it happen.
Right.
So there we were. So we missed all of you. And it is good to be back.
It was
a phenomenal retreat. There were people, there were old-timers there who actually said it was the best retreat they'd ever done. And a lot of it was that kind of thing. Alex was there. Jen and Alex and Amy and I were doing the retreat. And, of course, Alex was there cooking, and Jen was our work director. Was her maiden voyage as a work director in a situation like that, completely on her own. And so, because Dave was homesick, and he was scheduled to go, but he got sick, and so we all scrambled around and put it together. And so we've started doing this thing on that kind of retreat where we do a little workshop in the morning to get people focused and, you know, set up a theme for the retreat and that sort of thing. And so I think Jen did the first one, and which was a lot of fun, and Alex got completely inspired to go in this direction as a result of it.
Uh-huh.
And for the next however many days we were there, he just had people going with this stuff. And it was just, as Karen said, it was extraordinary. That, I mean, nobody, it was stuff we'd never done before, so nobody actually had any idea how it would turn out or how people would respond. And it was just one of the best things that we've ever done. So we're going to bring it back, put it on the schedule, and I think Jen came up with the name, the object of practice. And so people can look for that on the schedule. It was very fun. And then coincidentally, because I was kidding people that it did have a bit of a California woo-woo tone to it, you know, these objects and talking to them. And then I was reading a book where Katagiri Roshi from the Minneapolis Zen Center was doing talks on Dogen, and did this whole thing that was an exact parallel of what we were doing, and talked about what that is in Zen practice you know, just how we can look at it, what it means to be in relationship with nature and with the what we think of as inanimate objects that are around us. And so I got actually kind of validated, I guess would be the word, because here it was, you know, Dogen is talking about this in the early 1200s, and here we are in the mountains of North Carolina in the, you know, 2009, and we're doing these very modern seeming exercises that were exactly what he was looking at in that century.
Oh, wow.
So it was pretty darn magical.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting when you said seemingly inanimate objects.
Yes, which was his whole point. Dogen actually talked about or saw sentient beings as everything that exists. He made no distinction, as many Buddhists have, of, you know, this is animate and this is inanimate, so the animate is sentient and the inanimate is not. Or, you know, you'll read about people trying to determine what they can eat, because is it something that is self-aware? Does it cling to its life? Does it know that it's alive and cling to its life, and therefore, you know, not something a person should kill and eat? But Dogen was talking about it as a table. That was his, you know, the object, and not to take the life of the table. And so it's just it's good. It's good to look at. You know, it's good. It's good for us to stop and, as Karen was saying, you know, open our hearts to what's around us and what supports us, especially the kinds of things that we get used to thinking of as just something here for us to use, and not necessarily giving it the attention or appreciation that it really deserves. And that what happens when that's the case is that it's not because of what it does to that object, but of course what it does to us. To live with our hearts closed to everything except the things that we have decided in whatever karmic way are important and valuable.
Yes, yes, I got a real sense of caring for everything.
Yeah, yeah, everything. Now, my teacher used to say, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing with two hands. And that was his way of talking about being truly present to everything that we're engaged with. And, of course, he also said, you know, my favorite flower is the one I'm standing in front of. And, again, it's that sort of away from the dualistic conditioned mind of this is pretty and that's not, or this is valuable and that's not, or this has worth and meaning and that doesn't, but living in that non-separate reality that realizes that it's all one. So it's not possible to distinguish in that way or to differentiate and say this is and this isn't. It is all being arising simultaneously in the moment. And so that's good to be reminded in fun little concrete ways, especially when one is having that experience in some of the most beautiful terrain on the planet with some of the loveliest people anyone would ever hope to come in contact with.
Yes, sounds really great. Sherry, we have many callers here.
Good. Let's talk to them.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Teresa, and I'm calling from San Antonio, Texas.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
How are things in Teresa's world tonight?
Well, interesting.
Good.
I've been listening to the archives of this show quite a bit lately.
Uh-huh.
And it's proven to be, I think, very helpful and very interesting, but it's brought up some stuff for me that I'm not exactly sure what the next right thing for me to do is. Or,
well, actually,
or how to...
you have done the next right thing to do, right? You have called with your questions.
True. Thank you. Yeah, that's true. The person that called a few weeks ago, I don't recall her name, and I guess it's probably not important, but she was talking about how, you know, sometimes she'll get this feeling of just like there's some part of her or the sub-personality that just feels like she doesn't deserve to live or doesn't have the right to live. And I don't think she was really talking about feeling necessarily suicidal, but just like a hopelessness of that part of herself.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of hit
despair?
A chord. Yeah, just some despair. And I've been thinking about the, you know, the sub-personalities, and I've kind of recognized one that I have that I feel like is absolutely the dominant one that kind of makes most of the decisions for me. And that one is one that keeps getting into a cycle of relationships that I'm almost positive or not healthy, but that part of me argues about that and says, no, the relationship's fine, it's just you. You need to do things differently and be different, and then it would be a better relationship.
Okay, well, I think I've come up with a different name for that person.
Okay.
Sounds like self-hatred to me.
Okay. I think, yeah, I get a little confused because sometimes it sounds like that. Sometimes it sounds like somebody, you know, beating me up and making me feel just really worthless. And sometimes it just seems like a very vulnerable, needy little person that just, you know, is looking for attention or, you know, some validation. I don't know if those are two separate things.
Well, I don't know if you've heard us talk about this on any of the shows, but one of the things that I encourage looking into when you get into that, oof, you know, what is this? What's going on here? The way that when I said that sounds like self-hatred to me, it's because the voice was addressing you as you. No, there's nothing wrong with the relationship. It's you. If you would just be different, if you would just, then the relationship. Okay, so it's somebody talking to you. I have to make little quote marks in the air here. Somebody who calls you, you, yeah, and is talking to somebody. Now, we don't know who that is that's being talked to, but the person talking definitely doesn't experience itself as you.
Okay.
Does that?
Mm-hmm. That makes some sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So then when you get to somebody who feels, did you say needy?
Yeah, needy
and small,
very, very vulnerable.
Vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what's the language that is around that person?
A lot of fear and a lot of energy and, you know, this person has to work all the time, you know, to prove her worth. And
okay. And when she talks about how she feels or when you know, what's the kind of the language that you hear around her? Does she talk?
You know, I don't know. I'm not necessarily hearing her talk. It's more just like she's just got to produce results constantly, and she doesn't really get to talk. You know?
And there's a sense that she might be being beaten up, she might be the one who's being talked to in this way by that other voice?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
She's the one being beaten down.
Yeah, like she gets told, you know, her purpose is to, you know, find someone to care about her or love her or validate her, and she's just not good at it. And, you know, she needs to work harder and try harder. And I had this after listening to the archives, I had this experience of saying, you know what, I'm going to try and just, this might sound crazy, but give her a day off. You know, not just one day, you know, just say to her, like, you don't have to worry about anything today. You know, you don't have to worry about, you know, saying the right things or doing the right things or wearing the right clothes or eating too much food or any of the things that she worries about constantly.
Okay. That not only does not sound crazy to me, but I think you ought to give her the rest of her life off.
Yeah. Well.
And in addition, hire her a coach or a cheerleader, or as we like to talk about it, a mentor.
Okay.
Okay, so somebody who would come in and encourage her and support her and help her and let her know that she's doing a fine job. Reassure her, comfort her.
Okay.
Can you picture it? Have you ever read There's Nothing Wrong with You?
Yes.
Okay. So you know the scene in it when the person's going to go out and run, going to take up running?
Mm-hmm.
And the self-hating voice says something like, you're going to go out looking like that? I can't believe you're going to do that. And then there's the voice of the mentor person who says, doesn't matter. Put on anything. You'll be fine. Just go on. Get out there. Have a good time. You know, you ran for 10 minutes? Fabulous. Are you with me?
I'm with you.
Yeah. And, of course, just listening to that, we know. You know, if somebody is being beaten down all day long with what's wrong with them and what their lack of success in whatever the arbitrary, unstated, unfulfillable standards are, you know, then that's what you get at the end of the day. Despair, despondency, depression.
I think that, you know, part of why I began practice probably about a year and a half ago, I thought that I was doing it, you know, sort of to that end, to sort of, you know, recognize the duality of things and practice acceptance and kind of relax from this, like you said, arbitrary standard. What I think I've maybe recognized in the last week or so is that I think what actually happened is I started just to support that voice that's beating up on that person, to kind of like give that person enough of a break that she could keep going.
Uh-huh.
That's
an important insight, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't want to do that anymore.
Right. Well, here's the deal, Teresa. Here's the thing about practice, and maybe you've gotten this already, but it's always good to have a reminder. This is exactly how it goes. So you're going along, and you see something, and it changes you, you know, and you go with that for a while, you practice with that, and then you see something else, and it changes you, and you're in a different place. Okay? And then you go from there. So it's kind of like being on an around-the-world tour with no map and no idea where anything is.
So I think what you're saying is that that doesn't mean that the past year and a half, that even if my motivations were off or unclear to myself, that that's like wasted time or
it got you where you are now.
Yeah.
And there will always be a voice in there that would convince you that what you have just done has been a waste of time. So the very best thing to do is not believe it.
Yeah.
So it got you here. And sure, you know, the voices are always going to say, yeah, but you could have done this, or, you know, it didn't have to take you that long, or, well, if you'd only, but it takes us as long as it takes us to do anything. Yeah, I can remember whatever year it is in school when you learn multiplication tables, and I mean, I just didn't know what the heck they were talking about. I just couldn't imagine what they were talking about. And all of a sudden, it just dropped in, and I got it. And it was such a huge moment, you know? And trust me, I was not the first kid in the class to get it. But I got it. I got it when I got it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And that's what all of life is. We get something, It makes sense out of something. We take the next step. We see where we are. We look around. Where am I? What do I need? What's next? And if, here's the real key to the whole thing. If you do it with kindness and compassion for yourself, it actually doesn't matter where you are or what you're doing.
I can definitely try that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let that be your kind of your yardstick. You know, am I being kind to myself? Is this a kind thing for her? Does this make her feel cared for and loved and valued and important? No? Okay, well, then that's probably not the direction. And with that kind of attitude of mind behind you, supporting you and encouraging you and guiding you, you can do anything. But with somebody beating you up all the time, oof, it's easy to give up.
Yeah. It's easy to get discouraged.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes, it is. So put on your calendar getting out to see us for There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you so
much. And call in again and let us know how it's going.
I will do that.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Teresa. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful, simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, my life, what a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
I sure do love it. I sure. What a life.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, I have never seen so many red lights here.
And thank goodness they don't mean stop, they mean go.
Yes. Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jenna from Pittsburgh.
Hi there.
Hi.
You said Jenna, right?
Yep.
Oh, okay, good. Hi, Jenna. What's going on?
Well, I'm calling about romance.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
This is kind of new for me during my Zen practice, I guess. My boyfriend and I have dated about 9 months, and although he doesn't use the same language we use to talk about it here, he's familiar with a lot of the, you know, the voices in the head and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And we both talked the other day about how we haven't shared I love you with each other, the words I love you. And we kind of have here and there, love ya, that's why I love you. But we haven't said it, you know. And in the past, we've both said it to other people very quickly. And this is, we talked about how this is our first, like, really mature relationship. And so we talked the other day about how it was really kind of weird. Like, it's different. We were saying, you know, I feel like something's missing. Something's different in our relationship. But it's not necessarily bad because everything I see in you and everything we do, I love. But yet, I feel like something's missing. Thus, something's wrong.
Is it that you're not crazy?
What's that?
Is it that you're not crazy?
That's what I kind of called. I kind of feel like I just need somebody to say, it's different, but you're not crazy, and the way you used to be was crazy.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I know.
Do you think that that's it? You're not just wildly obsessed and head over heels and out of your mind and...
Well, I have a hunch that that's the case. You know, but you look everywhere you look, television, you know, other forms of media, your friends, your family members, those are the role models I see, this other thing. And a lot of times it's fighting, and we haven't fought once. We haven't even raised our voices to each other, which is absolutely amazing, especially if one knows my history of being angry. But yet we just have this doubt, like, you know, why don't we have this pulling animal magnetism? You know, like, wah! You know. However, we do have physical chemistry, but it's like maybe an obsession or falling in love or this hard to get thing. Something is different, and I'm just fallen into confusion.
Well, are you having a nice time?
We are. That's so funny.
And you like each other a lot and enjoy one another's company?
Yeah.
And so then maybe this is to make enough of a problem that there's going to be some sort of rant that goes on, and then there will be all kinds of emotion and passion, and everybody will feel like they're the right person?
Was that a question?
Yeah.
What was it?
That maybe that's the point of questioning this, that it's a way of stirring something up.
Stirring things up, yeah.
Yeah, that because there's nothing there stirring things up, so maybe we need to get something going to just...
Right. I was thinking about that, like something about, I think, the nature of hard to get used to stir things up, so at least I was revved up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're not revved. I mean, we have a lot of fun. It's a different kind of excitement,
I guess. Is it more like you've been together for a lot of years?
That's what we said. I said, you know, it's almost like we've been dating for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm so comfortable with you. But it's like we skipped over the usual courting that I do.
Uh-huh.
It just never happened. And we're just like best friends.
Uh-huh.
Best friends who are totally compatible and have fun with each other but are both doubting, well, geez, something must be wrong.
Uh-huh.
It's crazy.
And so do you think you can both just sort of go along enjoying what you have and know that if somehow you get a big message down the road that this is the wrong relationship to be in, that you'll know that and then do whatever is next?
I know. And I guess... Just to give you a little bit more information, the other, I guess my fear comes from, his would be different naturally, but my fear comes from the fact that he just got out of like a really intense relationship, and prior to that, he was married and he has 4 kids. So it's his time is always pulled to his kids every weekend. And then when I see him during the week, you know, even then he chooses to go be a coach. And so I'm seeing less and less time for him, and I guess when different things happen or any choice he makes, I just start doubting, like, oh, you know, he seems to not be picking me. Like, what if I'm making a mistake? What if these are all red flags and I should know better?
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't want to be that girl.
Can you trust yourself to know when that's the case?
I know. That's the thing. I have been doing that over the last couple of months. I've been saying...
Not analyzing it, not thinking about it. Not turning it over to conditioned mind. Not that. But just knowing that if this isn't the relationship for you, it will simply rise up in you.
And I'll know.
And you'll know. And you'll do something else.
Yeah. I guess it just fluctuates so rapidly throughout each day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes I'm centered and sometimes I'm not.
And again, I would suspect that a lot of this is conditioning trying to, you know, get something going. Because if there were a lot of drama all of a sudden, then it would feel like, okay, well, then this feels more like what a romance should feel like.
Yeah. I know, but I almost feel like I should say, I feel like I'm seeking for someone to tell me, this is what a romance should feel like.
Yeah, but
like, I want to know.
Well, but you've had, it sounds like, others that were different.
Yeah.
So it may be that what you're not actually looking for somebody to tell you that, but you're exploring different ways that romance can show up.
Yeah, I guess,
And perhaps feeling your way into, you know, how you want it to be.
Yeah, that's true.
I keep thinking about, you know, the countries where marriages are arranged. And the people talk about is that they meet someone who with whom they are compatible. So it's easy for them to be friends and to like each other and to enjoy one another because that's all been taken care of. They share values and, you know, interests and all of that. And then they fall in love, which is just so backwards to us that it's hard to imagine. And yet they do it with great frequency and success. So it's a relationship based on something other than the insanity of chemistry.
Yeah. And I guess I was thinking that, you know, if that's not there, somehow this isn't going to work.
Well, the thing about it is, I bet you anybody who's been in a relationship for any length of time would say, what you can know is it won't last.
When what happens?
Chemical stuff is not going to last.
Yeah.
And so what you're going to wind up with is, do you like each other? Are you compatible?
I know.
And is it somebody with whom you would like to continue to make a romance?
Yeah.
Because that's what's going to be required. It's not going to be automatic. If it is, that's a really unusual situation. And, of course, that's the one that's held up to us as the model for what everyone should be experiencing. So, of course, as we know, when that begins to fade, people start looking around saying, wow, there's something wrong with our relationship, and they look for that next crazy high. But, you know, with anything, I mean, you buy a car, and it's the car of your dreams, and you're just so happy, but you can't maintain that for very long.
Yeah.
You know, you get a house, you get new furniture, what a new job, whatever it is. If we're going to maintain a sharp interest in something, we have to bring that sharp interest to it. It's not going to be automatic. That's not how the system works.
Hmm.
We become habituated, and that kind of obsessive quality falls away.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
But can I brag for a second?
Sure.
About, this practice has helped me so much kind of through this 9 months, you know, with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times I've just been able to turn to myself to kind of handle really every sphere of my life, you know.
Yeah.
And a couple times I was, you know, what's so cool is like once you learn the practice and have a teacher and sit and everything, you start to realize that you can just create these tools to use. And they don't even have to last forever, but they work.
Yes.
It's like there's like this infinite, you know, possibility how to make it.
Yes.
You know, and there's been so many times, you know, I've been able to use something you said or another student or participant has said and then twist it to make it my own and make it really, you know, save me.
Yeah.
You know, to be present.
Yeah.
And
avail yourself of those tools at critical times. And as you're indicating, that's available to you because you're practicing.
It is. And a couple times I even had to ask him about a couple things that really bothered me. And I just really did some soul searching and realized, you know, this is the right thing. And I realized he might be upset and we could break up. But after I did it, I was just so proud of myself. You know, I didn't even care what happened because I really took care of myself. I literally danced. I danced around, like, in the shower later, like, yes, I took care of myself.
Yeah.
And it feels like this is everything that I've ever wanted in my life, this practice. And I just wanted to thank you and everything.
And so when the voices are trying to convince you that insanity is a better way to be living, just remember that. Because one of the first things to go when people fall insanely in love is their practice.
Yeah, which did happen. And I had to crawl back into it. Yeah, but I'm back.
All right. Take good care of yourself.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jenna. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take another sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Thanks. Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have a lot of friends here still.
Good.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Dennis from Pittsburgh.
Hey, Dennis.
How's it going?
Good, you?
I'm all right. I'm kind of reporting back. So we talked a couple months ago about my anxiety.
Uh-huh.
And we kind of got cut off at the end, but that's okay. But one of the things that I was going to do was try this experiment with the caffeine.
Yes.
And so I was like, well, you know, I'll get some caffeine. So I went and I got three of those cans of caffeinated soda because I don't drink coffee. I didn't want to confuse the coffee with the experience. But I didn't actually, I have them sitting on my counter and I just kind of use them as a reminder because by the time I got around to wanting to do it, I realized that, you know, it was true and that the anxiety really wasn't.
That it was true and the anxiety was what, Dennis?
The anxiety wasn't such a problem, like that I could deal with it and, you know, if I provided some mentorship and I came back to center, then it was, you know, a feeling in my body, and it's a feeling that in a lot of other contexts.
You know, I'm having a heck of a time hearing you. Michael, can you hear Dennis okay?
When I pay close attention, I can hear him. Dennis, can you speak up a little bit?
Okay, I'll try to do that.
All right, that's better. Thank you.
Right, and so I just kind of realized that the anxiety, you know, I could accept it and it wasn't such a problem and it wasn't a disruption. And it, under other circumstances, if I wasn't listening to voices, it would just be kind of being energetic and just wanting to do things.
Aha. Uh-huh. So, oh, that's so huge, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it wasn't the anxiety that was a problem, it was the voices.
Right, and so, but the thing, what's happening now is, I get into a situation where I'm, this sounds weird, but where I'm not anxious, and then I don't feel like doing something that's really important to me, and I just kind of waste time, and then I kind of reflect on it, and I realize that this is kind of this weird strategy I have to wait until, you know, the drama and the anxiety ramps up before I really feel motivated to do anything. So then I reflected on that a little bit, and I thought that a problem for me is that I don't really believe that I can control the focus of my attention.
Uh-huh.
And that this has just been kind of a really big problem for me. So I was looking for some exercises to do with that, because what happens is I get in a situation where I have lots of freedom and I have lots of time and I'm pretty calm, but I just don't want to, I just don't step out there and make the choice that I, you know, just be what I really want to be, because maybe I'm scared or something, but I'm just kind of convinced that I don't have a lot of control.
Okay, so what I'm getting out of this is that you're going along and you feel calm and pretty relaxed, but then you don't want to do the things that you don't have the energy or the drive or whatever it is to do the things that you say you want to do or told you want to do. How do you know you want to do these things?
I guess because there are things I really want for myself. You know, I feel like the things I really want when I kind of clear everything else away and think about what I want for my life. Like, I mean, I think of that phrase that you use in your books and your lectures, living big.
Uh-huh.
And I just feel like, you know, I feel like I live small a lot of the time, and that, yeah, so.
Okay, so what would...
And, yeah, okay, one of the other things is, I mean, I feel it, though, because, like, I sometimes use these test phrases, like things I repeat to myself, and then I see what my response is. So one I've been doing recently is, so I can do what I choose, and I choose what I do. And I can feel, you know, when I say that, I can feel a lot of voices resisting that, and I can feel these voices saying, no, that's not right, or I feel like a lot of remorse or regret. And so that's been in the past, in other contexts, a kind of reliable indicator that I'm actually listening to conditioning about something.
That you're what?
That I'm listening to conditioning about something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So once again, this is good. Once again, the situation is not the problem. It's the voices.
Right.
Yeah. So if you, what is one thing that you would like to do for your life that would be a bigger chunk of things?
Spend more time writing.
Spend more time writing.
Yeah.
Okay. And what time of day is your best writing time?
Well, I guess, you know, in the evening or in the last few hours of my day. But
The last few hours of your day?
Yeah, I kind of want to move it up because I feel like I'm only really doing it, you know, kind of in painfully, like when I'm really anxious and by the time. So because it's the thing where by the time of the end of the day rolls around, I start beating myself up and saying, oh, you know, you should have been writing all day, but you didn't do anything until now. And so now at least I'll do some writing and then I'll go to bed and then everything.
Okay.
Will be okay.
So once again, the problem is not the situation. The problem is the voices.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're doing a pretty good job of getting you coming and going. So do you work?
I'm a student and I do work. And so I'm, My job is to be writing on my dissertation.
Okay. Oh, okay. So in theory, you should be writing all day.
Yes.
Okay, got it. All right, so what time in your day would be ideal to start writing?
I'd like to do it, you know, after I go through my morning ritual, get up, shower, and eat and all that. And because, you know, I'm lucky enough to have a lifestyle where I don't have a lot of, you know, obligations, like someone with a big family would, for example.
Okay, good. So 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock.
In the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So here's what I would encourage you to do: write up the schedule for yourself, and make it something that's realistic. So. You get up in the morning, you do your morning rituals, you do have your breakfast, that sort of thing, and you're going to be sitting down to write at, say, 9:30. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And before you do that, I would encourage you to do some good old-fashioned journaling. And that's just checking in with how you're feeling, what the voices are saying, what they're doing. Remind yourself of your commitment to work on your project. And look at, so it's 9:30, I'm going to work to 11:30, then I'm going to, and lay out what your schedule for an average day is going to be,
uh-huh.
Okay? And decide how many days a week that's going to be or whatever. You know, when you lay out your week, what's today, Tuesday? Okay, so lay out the rest of the week, put your appointments in and things that you need to do, and then you're going to start writing at 9:30, okay? And then you're going to work for a couple of hours?
Yes.
Maybe stop and get some exercise, walk outside, have some fresh air, check in with yourself, okay? And then decide when you're going to start in the afternoon, okay?
Uh-huh.
Maybe 2 o'clock?
Sure, yeah.
Is this going to work for you, Dennis?
I might have to change the time because my sleep is pretty irregular. So I don't actually get up at 8 in the morning every day.
Okay.
But I can see the pattern, right?
So, yeah, exactly. And so this is what you're going to do, okay, is to go on the offensive. Enough of this, you know, waiting for the voices of conditioning to dictate your life circumstances to you. Okay? So if you want to take this on, if you decide that you're going to keep your agreements with yourself, which is critical. It's essential for everybody that we learn to keep our agreements with ourselves. So because if you can't trust you to take care of you, you're in deep trouble. And there's, you know, I mean, basically, if you can't trust you to come through for you, then your life is in the hands of those voices in your head. And they don't have hands, but it doesn't seem to stop them. Okay? So to lay out your schedule and to make a commitment that you're going to do it, and you're on a short leash here, okay, because we've got to give you a lot of support here for this first period of time. I want you to check in next Tuesday, okay? And tell us how many days you were able to keep your agreement with yourself and spend whatever. And, you know, don't make it such a big chunk of time that it's just impossible. Start with something that's manageable. You know, if 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon is a manageable length of time to work, then that's great. And you'll fill in the other things with things that support you, all right? And then let us know what happens. And in the evening, if you would journal about what the voices said, what happened, how you did, what stopped you, where you were successful, what worked well, and then give us a little report, okay?
Okay. I'm kind of excited, but it'll be a big challenge for me because I'm really kind of the test schedules generally. So this is going
to be... Of course.
I mean,
of course. The part of you, and I'm not even sure it is a part of you at this point, but that in your life that wants to keep you in this place would detest schedules. Because a schedule is another word for freedom.
Uh-huh.
Yeah? Only it's freedom for you instead of for conditioning. Not having a schedule is freedom for conditioning and prison for you.
Uh-huh.
Can you get a sense of that?
Yeah, I think I'm open to that now, and I think
good.
That'll be like a big topic in my journaling personally.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it's not, again, it's not a contest. It's to see what happens. And for you to start down that road, you know, seriously and with a lot of support, being able to trust yourself to keep your agreements with yourself. All righty?
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, and thanks for all the callers for calling in, too, because it really helps me a lot.
Yeah, it's a good deal, isn't it? And we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, next week.
All right. Thanks. Good night, Dennis.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Dennis. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we are very popular tonight.
Good. We love to be popular.
It is good to be popular. We have 5 more callers in the queue. It's about 10 minutes to 6. And so for those of you we don't get to tonight, please call in early next week. And there we are.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Greta.
Hey, Greta.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to check in since the retreat conditioning's really been in full force.
Huh?
And the previous callers have been helpful in the kinds of reminders that I need. But it feels like I'm just like I fell over a cliff when I left the retreat. I had a lot of energy, but it all kind of spiraled into a kind of a rugged place, and I'm just kind of like regaining my senses now.
Hmm. Well, you must have made a lot of good progress on that retreat to get that kind of backlash.
Well, I recall that was possible, but there's just so many things have come up that feel old and feel ugly and just, you know, sticky and difficult. Since then, it's kind of like, so all the possibility that was offered and all the tools that were offered, it's kind of like a magician just flicked a cloth and they vanished. And, you know, I've just been handed my ugly old life back by conditioning as, you know, well, that was just, you know, a show. That was a magic trick, and that's not really what's going on for you.
Well, that's rotten, isn't it?
Yeah, and I didn't put that together until I just said it now, that's because on some level it's just been really believable, you know, everything that's been presented. And
isn't that astounding, though?
I
think that is the one thing that I find most amazing about the human existence. That there you were on retreat, everything is clear, right? It's all shiny. You can see how it all works, see the possibility. Life is great. Leave the retreat, and it's like somebody just turns all the lights off.
I think there was a bit of a setup there in a way, because it's not like it was my first retreat.
Right.
And so I heard some language that, well, you know, you've left retreat before, and, you know, it's not that big a transition for you, and you were, you know, seeing conditioning in your daily life before, so you'll be fine.
Yeah, you.
And then
you.
It just all fell apart.
You. There it is. You've got the coach with the tail and ears and pitchfork.
Well, I can dangling that before me so that then the flicking of the cloth by the magician was, then it all fell into place.
Yeah.
That whole construct just got created in that instant because I believed that I was going to be fine.
Yeah, you were already, set up. Yeah, it told you what to believe. You believed it, and by God, there you went.
And the funny thing, not so funny in that way, but in just
in a tragic sort of way? Funny in a tragic sort of way?
Exactly. So last night I did my meditation and I was trying to squeeze it into all the things, you know, the to-do list, and reading a passage in the Making a Change for Good. And, you know, what I heard in my head was, look at that, you're still not doing it right.
Whoa.
And it was just so clear and so nasty and so like, look at your sorry situation, you know, even though you meditated, even you're reading this thing, and here's what it can, you know, here's what is being offered to you in practice, but you can't do it right.
Wow. Wow. And you saw it.
I saw it. I was so grateful for seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wanted to call in because it feels really rocky.
Yeah, well, and again, it's just the most fascinating, damnable thing that the believing is so strong. When, you know, when it reaches out and grabs you, when it flicks that cloth, and there you are in that dark place, you know, any other reality seems so far away.
Exactly. And part of the not doing it right is a belief that if I was doing it right, I would have the mentor there and I would be taking care of that young part of myself that must be blinded by and hypnotized by all this, and I wouldn't be having this experience. I'd be having a better or the right experience if I was doing it right.
Yeah. So there we have that wonderful spot where conditioning has every bit of the lingo and can use
mm-hmm.
all of it against you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know.
So then I...
Go ahead.
No, I... The only thing I know to do is call in at some point. I'm like, okay, one foot in front of the other, one breath, what, you know, just one next whatever thing.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there are some of those tricks, you know, the dominant, non-dominant handwriting, you know, that sort of little technique can sometimes help us disidentify a little bit. The other thing that I encourage people toward is getting some sort of visual about it. You know, who is the little person who's being shut into the dark closet, and you know, drawing that or getting models, you know, cardboard cutouts or that sort of thing that depict it, so that the more clarity you have about how it happens, the more you can see it there in front of you and recognize it when you're experiencing it.
Right. When I was waiting on hold, what came up was what you said to me on retreat, which is write it all down. And conditioning comes up with a million excuses, but I saw these little tiny notebooks in the store the other day, and I was like, you know, you could put one of those in your pocket, and you could stop and write it down.
Yeah, yeah.
And just do that. I mean, and the last caller and your advice there is just keep your commitments to yourself. And that's kind of what I've been thinking this whole time waiting on hold was, I want this magic bullet. And what I came up with while waiting was just make this commitment to do one thing for yourself in getting out of this situation. Just make one thing happen.
Yeah. And
the conditioning wants to set up all these things I need to do in order to do it right.
Right. And then talk you out of doing them and then beat you up for knowing the right thing to do and not doing it.
Right.
Yeah, perfect system. But the one thing that occurs to me with this is to see if you can at least get some visual on that person who gets put in that position. The young person who gets set up, who falls for it. I was talking to somebody on retreat about the, you know, the old Charlie Brown and Lucy and the football. So there's somebody who gets lulled into believing what those voices of conditioning say. And if you could see who that is and get a really good description of her, how old she is and what her body language is like and, you know, her facial expression, and, you know, you might be able to find a picture of yourself when you were young when she was having that experience, so that you get something really concrete there in front of you to remind you, so that you recognize outside of yourself the experience that you're having inside yourself.
Okay, so something's coming up for me while you're describing that. I have to kind of sit with it and see, because for me, it's always such an intellectual exercise, and that's the other thing I've kind of realized is, you know, on the retreat, we were trying more to see what arises, and I dropped all that, and now I'm realizing, okay, well, I didn't drop it all. I've been able to do it, like at least with reflective listening buddy calls, but to stop going in my head every time, because it just keeps that cycle so intact.
Yes.
Yeah, and really just try to get into my body and quiet it down to see what comes up.
Yeah, let it arise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And it will. It'll occur to you.
Yeah.
You'll get it. But that feeling of having something to see,
right,
that's how I'm feeling. What are the voices?
Right.
Oh, that's right. That's what they're talking about. That's the self-talk that I'm hearing. Yes, that's the place I am. That's the dark room. Okay. Now.
Well, what it is, what I'm getting is, I'm being told by conditioning that I can't see that person. I don't have any compassion for that person. I can't take care of her. And it's just blocking me from really getting to that place where, yeah, sure, I can. I need to create that for myself so I can see her. What you're saying is exactly right. If I can see her, because I can feel it while you're saying it, I can take care of her.
Exactly. Exactly. Very good. All right. So you're gonna get back to us too, right?
Of course.
Of course. Okay.
Thank you so much for being there.
Oh yeah. Well, it's yeah. It's good to practice.
Because that's
isn't it?
The other thing that came up for me, too, is what's my alternative? You know I don't have an alternative. I can't go with conditioning in this life. So
right.
I'm so grateful for the practice.
Oh, me too. Me too. Yeah. All right. Well, take good care of yourself.
Thank you both. Good night.
Good night.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Greta. Sherry, it's 6:01.
I know. We left a lot of people hanging, and I hope they'll forgive us and give it another try next week.
Yes, yes, yes.
Thanks,
thank you for
Michael.
Practice.
Yeah, thanks for practice. Thanks for being there and hosting us.
Yeah, great to have you back, Sherry.
Thank you. Talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Good night.
Good night.